The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
Right, we're back. Felt like we were just here.
No,
our scheduling is on point.
It's wonky. It's either like, man, I haven't seen you in 4 months. How's it going? Or it's like, weren't you here 3 days ago?
Yeah. Well, we see each other.
Yeah.
But at the show, yeah, it just seems like we go in flurries a little bit.
Yeah, and the show blurs together with all the off-air stuff. And
yeah, who knows what we're recording?
Totally.
Got to be careful.
Are these things on?
No. All right. Is the show started? Yeah, we started?
I think we're,
okay.
Yeah, we're
cool.
Good.
It's that time. It's the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. I'm your host, Jay, here at the Brewing Network Studios in not rainy downtown Concord, which is great. It's raining pretty hard in Berkeley when I left.
It's a little lull in the storm here. It's been several days of rain, and now it's just a brief respite, but I'm sure it's right around the corner again.
So California is freaking out.
Freaking out. No one knows how to drive. Everyone is preparing for mudslides.
Speaking of not knowing how to drive, Bevo's here.
Hey, Bev.
So rude.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm just teasing, but actually, Bevo almost died, and we're glad that she's alive.
Twice.
Yeah, Bevo missed the post-Christmas Christmas party that we do for the Brewing Network Studios staff.
Yes.
And friends. And friends. And we've done it 2 years in a row at the Rare Barrel. We were there a couple nights ago, mm-hmm. partying it up. And, you know, of course, in the service world, the most, you know, busy times in December, and it's hard to, you know, get away for a Saturday like, you know, your corporate entities. So we postponed it until after the first of the year, and then we gather first at the Hop Grenade for a few years, and then the last two at the Rare Barrel, and have a good time and exchange gifts and stuff. But Bevo missed. Have you ever missed one before?
No, never.
Yeah, it felt weird, man.
So we thought about canceling it.
That's totally. Yeah. It didn't feel like a party. Is it? What's the point?
But I guess Bevo had a treacherous trek to try and get there. But
yeah, I'm glad you're in one piece.
Yeah, we didn't make it, but we're fine.
Oh, you're alive.
We're alive.
You made it.
We didn't make it to the party, but we made it through life.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we had the room temperature gin ready to go, ready to pour into a shaker glass, but Bevo was nowhere to be seen.
That I could very poorly try to pass off as a glass of water.
Yeah. It's water.
It'll keep until next year, so.
Yeah.
Doesn't go
back. That's what I hear.
All right. Great show tonight. We have Night Shift Brewing. Joe and Matt are going to be joining us, and they're kind enough to send us some beer very quickly, actually.
Yeah.
So, great job on you guys.
It did. It was like 2 days from the East Coast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good on.
They're out of just outside of Boston and Everett, Mass. I've been there a few times.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Great spot. So if you want to email us with feedback, scott@thebrewingnetwork.com, jay@thebrewingnetwork.com. We are live on video, thebrewingnetwork.com/TV. You can listen live on the Brewing Network app. Just search BM Mobile in your search bars. Subscribe to the podcast and leave feedback. We love hearing from you. So, we appreciate all the people who give us the 5 stars and then click out of it. But we love the little responses. So when you have a chance, tell us what you're thinking through that, too.
Absolutely. Ratings and reviews make a big difference for growing the show, so thank you to all.
Absolutely. Last show, we had our good friend, Dr. Lambic, talking about his new brewery, finally, Mellow Mink Brewing out in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great fun, great beers, and just great to hear from him. You know, I think he's been, you know, in a bunker, essentially, trying to get this thing started up, but nice to see he's on the other side and doing great things.
Absolutely. It just takes so much out of you, especially that crunch time, like those last, I mean, it's all crunch time, but especially like those last few months, mm-hmm. everything seems like you're just putting on the finishing touches, but then like 2 months goes by and there's still more finish. You're just like pushing toward that finish line where you can finally open.
Oh, yeah.
And then the real work starts, mm-hmm. you know, then you really got to keep the beers coming. You got to, you know, always, you're familiar with this. Always try to increase production, get your supply straight away. So, I mean, he's out the other side, but like, you know, now the real work starts.
Yeah, it's the best right after that, like first batch, first weekend of being open kind of thing where, you know, it's one thing to get the mad rush to get open. And you're like, oh, wow, we made money today. Actually, probably lost money overall, but
right, but
revenue,
something came in.
Yeah, revenue is coming in. And then once it's like, oh, okay, well, now that that's over, you can relax a little bit. But then, yeah, you're right, the real work begins. So great to hear from Matt. And then updates since the last show, don't really have any because it's just a few weeks ago.
Well, how was your Christmas and your New Year's? You went to London.
Christmas was cool. Yeah, I went to London. That was great. Excuse me. I got a little under the weather there, and that was unfortunate, but had a good time. Went to English Premier League match. Saw Tottenham Hotspur.
At Wembley?
Yeah, at Wembley. That was cool. Hit a few pubs, but yeah, the sickness really took the wind out of my sails a little bit, but it was fine. I had some good time with family, and then, but it did last until New Year's. So I was just like sleeping on New Year's.
It's a bummer.
So that's
right. Hopefully, are we coming out the other side of it now?
Oh yeah.
Cause we're ready for cards in the air at 6 p.m. tonight.
Yep.
Cool.
We're going.
Now, I don't know. I mean, everyone knows the warm beer tropes. Is there a sour scene to be spoken of? Like, are there breweries out there doing sours?
Yeah, there are. You know, I think in the last show, we got actually an email from someone who was doing, you might recall, like a mobile cool ship in the UK.
Remember that.
And I've had a few other English breweries beers that are doing Brett and sour beer. There was some kettle sours that I just saw on tap at like random pubs.
Really?
And like,
oh, that's cool.
Had like tart IPA, and I was like, wow,
whoa,
this is awesome.
Nice.
But I mean, of course, England is like a pretty mature beer market. Now, I think they've had a lot of the same beers and types of beers for a very long time. However, they have this long tradition with beer, and beer culture is very good there. So I think as they've gotten into these, I guess, I mean, they're none of them are really American styles. Nothing's really American style. It's all borrowed from somewhere else. But, you know, they're making American style IPA in air quotes, and a lot more of the more innovative styles that we have coming out. They're taking to that very quickly. So I think it's a great scene. Plus, I love English cask beer. It's so good.
It is good.
It's awesome. And just the pub culture. I love that, too. So great place.
Now you're back and it's the new year, 2019. Yeah. So what? Okay, well, first of all, do you have any resolutions? Do you make a New Year's resolution? Beer or not beer related?
No.
No.
I'm not a big resolution person.
No?
Usually they just come throughout the year, like, you know, after a late night.
I resolve to finish this pack of cigarettes for sure. What about you, Bebe? You got New Year's resolutions?
No, I don't make them either. But I also read that if you do make them, you're more likely to achieve them if you don't tell people what they are.
It's like a wish. You can't tell what the wish is, otherwise it won't come true.
Sure.
Yeah.
I would think it would be the opposite, but that's interesting.
Yeah, right. I would think so, too. You're like, because now you're accountable to these people that know what you're supposed to be doing, but it doesn't work that way.
Well, right. But the thought process behind the article I was reading, I guess, is because, let's say, I want to lose weight. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm exercising like every day this week or this, that's my goal. And somebody tells you like, oh, that's really great. So you already get that accolade.
Okay.
So rather than like staggering it and like not mentioning it and having it come forth sort of organically is, I don't know, you're more likely to achieve it.
I can see that.
I read.
You guys don't even know, but I'm working on becoming more handsome. I didn't want to mention it just there because you would have said how handsome I am.
Now that you have said it, I feel like you're going to have a hard time becoming more handsome.
Oh,
yeah. You're going to have a hard time anyway.
Face for podcasting. There's nowhere to go but up, Bebo.
That's what everybody keeps saying.
Yeah. You know, back to your kind of initial question, we have big things going on at the Rare Barrel. I'd say we're doing a lot of new styles and new packaging formats and stuff. You know, I think if you know our beer, you know that I would say doing a really good job with our niche, but we want to apply our ability to deliver high quality beer to a few other things. And we're going to, you know, stretch our legs out a little bit. For example, one project we're working on right now is our tart IPA project. And that's been going great, but as we make this IPA, you know, we basically brew, you know, a standard IPA and blend barrel-aged sour beer into it towards the end of the process. And along the way, it's like we have this great IPA, and we're like, wow, this is awesome. We have guest beers on tap at the Rare Barrel, and So we're able to compare it to other people's beers, and we're like, hey, you know, this holds up. And so we actually just started serving that on its own at the brewery, so just an IPA, which is pretty cool.
I mean, it's the pre-blended,
yeah,
just IPA.
Like, it's like a cool component that we can put on tap.
Sure. Is it called Rare Barrel IPA?
I think it's TRB Hazy IPA.
Oh, that's weird.
Like,
oh,
that.
So it's a hazy IPA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then some of it goes to oak barrels where it gets introduced to a mixed culture. So that's like a barrel-aged IPA. And then we have, so 100% barrel-aged IPA. And then we have just a sour beer component that's been barrel-aged that comes into the fresh IPA as well. So right now we have tart IPA and IPA, both versions on tap at the Rare Barrel. So it's kind of cool new stuff like that.
What was the reasoning behind making the base a hazy IPA?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Tommy.
Okay.
Tommy, our cellar manager.
That's my
that
lackey.
Decision.
I don't know.
I like West Coast IPA, but I mean, it's funny. Now when you go out and you get an IPA, it doesn't even have to say hazy anymore. I would just say that, and maybe this is just in the Bay Area or more like craft focused places, but IPAs I get, I just expect it to be hazy instead of clear.
It's that saturated. Like, yeah, it is, certainly is in the Bay Area. Like, that's the thing.
I like West Coast
IPA. That's
though.
The default now.
Yeah.
My lay brain would make this assumption. A hazy IPA would be a better base if you were going to go sour IPA. You know, it already kind of has that citrusy, orange juicy, like more components that would lend itself to a souring or a blend of an acidic whatever. Do you think that's fair to say?
I think so. I think maybe the hop selection goes along with that too, because maybe more of the fruity hops are going into the hazy IPAs and more of the dank hops is kind of like a West Coast thing. Mm-hmm. That might be a way overgeneralization, but yeah, I agree. I think the sour undertones really will complement the fruitier hops and the fruitiness of fruity esters of the hazy IPA styles.
Sure.
Yeah, it's all exciting stuff, and we're definitely looking forward to branching out more and sharing that with everybody. So
it's very cool. I do have to share one Rare Barrel related tidbit from the Brewing Network Greater Studio staff post Christmas party. You guys were very generous, of course, in giving, you know, in lending us the space, but even more generous in dipping into the cellar and pulling out some bottles that very infrequently see the light of day. And we did get a little hit of the PH1, the bottled version of PH1, which was just the single barrel. What came out of PH1 and was bottled, and man, was there just, how many cases was that run?
Oh man.
Just a few
hundred bottles.
Yeah, a few hundred bottles. So very, very obviously limited supply. It's just one barrel. And man, you know, we were saying this as we were standing around tasting it, and it's so complex and so beautiful. And obviously you did a great job with it. You still have to handle the barrel properly. It's not, it's not magic, you know, but of course you guys
it might be, or
it just might be, but of course you, in your very capable hands, the beer that came out of there was clean and layered and complex. And it's so hard to believe that that's not a blended beer. And I was saying, like, it's so hard to live up to hype like that. You know, when you have so much mystique, the storied nature of PH1, it would be so easy, like having a movie built up and it's so good, and then you go see it and you're like, I don't know, it was fine, I guess, because your expectations are so inflated, right? So I just have to say thanks for sharing that, and man, that's just something special. And Peter Buchert is lucky to have that thing back in his life.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait. We've been doing a little beer swapping with Peter, so we get to try kind of what's lately coming out of the barrel as well. So it's been a fun journey to be on,
man.
And yeah, happy that we could bottle some of the journey up into a beer.
Yeah, so good. God dang, so good.
All right, should we...
Oh, wait, I have to share other thing. You also gave us some of these special bottles, you know, from the Ambassadors Club and stuff to give away as part of, you know, we did a raffle for everybody. And at one point, bartender Aaron, won a bottle. I believe it was Cherry Home Sour Home. And this is like, you know, black label, wax seal, Ambassadors Club beer. I mean, it's special stuff. And Aaron gets up there after his number's called, and he, like, you know, proudly lifts the bottle in the air like the Statue of Liberty, and then proceeds to drop the bottle on the concrete floor. And it sprays everywhere. It shut. Now, the bottle didn't break, but the top popped off, and the spray must have gone 50 feet. I mean, it was really impressive. It was a geyser. And then, of course, you know, the whole room is like, oh, you know, and then we insisted, everyone started chanting, chug it. So he had to pick up the foam laden bottle that had the rest of whatever in it and finish the rest of it off. But that was amusing too. So of all of the reverence and you know, delicate treatment we give to some of these really special beers, then there's the other side of just spiking on the cement floor.
Yeah. Still got to be fun.
Good times.
All right. Should we get to a break?
Yeah.
Before we do that, I just want to say, listen to other great band shows like Brew Strong, Dr. Homebrew, Brewing with Style, Heads and Tails, Shine Runner, and Tres Cervezas, Hop and Brew School, and... All right, should we get to a break
then
bring the Night Shift guys on?
Yes, sir.
Cool, we'll be right back on the Sour Hour.
For nearly 40 years, one organization has had your back. The American Homebrewers Association. Are you a member? Why not? Join the more than 40,000 brewers who enjoy all the American Homebrewers Association has to offer. Like Zymergy Magazine, in print and online, plus the Zymergy app. Zymergy is the leading publication for amateur brewers around the world. Supporters also get member deals at their local breweries, bars, and homebrew shops. These alone quickly pay for your membership. You'll also get great member-only resources at homebrewersassociation.org and access to AHA events like the National Homebrewers Conference and the National Homebrew Competition. The American Homebrewers Association promotes the hobby of homebrewing, protects the interests of homebrewers, and brings beer lovers together. Become a member today. It costs less than a batch of beer and gives back so much more. Visit homebrewersassociation.org.
This is Corey King from Side Project Brewing, and you're listening to the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. If you want to drink some real sour beer, skip the Rare Barrel and come on over here, guys.
We're back. Corey always talking shit.
Skip the Rare Barrel.
It's okay. I always talk shit back to him. Love Corey. Speaking of Corey, we had our... you tried some of our new Side Project collab beer that's just coming out now.
That is what inspired me to play that. Yes. That was incredibly good, too. Was it, what, peach and cinnamon? What
white
was it?
Peach, white nectarine.
There you go. Yeah. Oh,
great
so
stuff.
Good.
Yeah, really cool. Excited for that to come
it's
out.
It's a long time in coming, that project. Mm-hmm. You guys must have talked about a collab. I mean, geez, it's been four years, whatever, since they were on the show. How come it took so long?
Just travel schedules. Wanted to do it when they were out here. So we did it, I believe it was right before or right after Firestone Walker, which is where I think that clip is from, because you know, where we serve beer at the same
place.
Usually.
Yep.
It's probably right before, or right after I kicked his ass in Cornwall, but I can't remember.
Yeah, and then that was the one where he was surrounded by like 12 beautiful women in his booth. Right? Was that Corey? I'm pretty sure I remember going up there, and it was like 9 beautiful women and Corey at the booth, and I was like, this man has figured out life.
Yeah. Although, everyone who works at Side Project is totally awesome, and we're great friends with all them. So it was cool to finally follow through with the collab. Speaking of collaborators, Scott, before we bring on the Night Shift guys, I want to thank a couple of our great sponsors like the Wine and Hop Shop, wineandhop.com, locally owned and operated for over 40 years. Most items ship within 24 hours. BN listeners get a flat $8 shipping rate on orders under 25 pounds and are BN shipping the notes field of the shopping cart. The discount will be taken off after checkout. Madison residents, who are all happy that the Bears lost, order your homebrew supplies online at wineandhop.com and pick them up at Working Draft Beer Company, located on Wilson Street, right across from Central Park. We'll waive the shipping and give you half off your first beer. Wine and Hop Shop, wineandhop.com. All right, let's get into it with Joe Mashburn and Matt Eshelman from Night Shift Brewing. Are you guys there?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having us.
Confident start.
Yeah, it's about time, dude.
Awesome. Well, good to hear from you guys, and great to finally have you on the show. And thanks for sending out all this beer, this great beer, on such short notice. Really appreciate it.
I tried really hard to drink all of it before we could get to the air, but you sent so much, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that was definitely a tactical maneuver to send that much.
Awesome. Well, why don't we start here, Joe and Matt? Why don't you tell us what your guys...
There is Thanks, one Scott. Of them. This is a golden Weiss I just opened.
What are your current titles and responsibilities there at Night Shift?
This is Joe. I'm the head brewer here at Night Shift. A lot of production planning, employee management, recipe development, though, that is slowly becoming less and less as the brewery grows. Yeah, other than that, also pseudo repair person.
Awesome. I'm Matt. I'm the quality manager and I oversee our lab team, and I'm the basically the resident nerd and wet blanket when it comes to food safety.
We can't do this. You can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Joe, I mean, we've met a few times, and I've had your beer over the years. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what Night Shift was when it started and how it's evolved into what it is today, because I think things have changed a little bit over the years.
Yeah, so, you know, the original plan, Night Shift started in it really producing beer in 2013, and the original plan was really not to do IPA. So we kind of came out of the gate with a Berliner Weiss in our lineup, a bunch of different Belgian beers, a bunch of a little bit more off-the-wall beers. We had three yeast fermented Belgian beer with vanilla beans and things like that. So kind of started off a little bit more down that road. And now we've moved more into the IPA realm, and we're still doing the Berliners, but the Belgian beers have kind of trailed off. So that's kind of been the Berliners have kind of been the standby.
Is that because of they weren't moving as quickly, or is just brewer preference?
Honestly, this was something that the IPAs were really something that we wanted to explore, and all of a sudden we were kind of seeing a positive reaction from those, and those have kind of taken over due to demand forces.
Gotcha. Well, we have this the Golden Weiss in our glasses right now, and this is in a can, but it also says mixed fermentation sour ale. So how would you is this a Berliner style, or how would you describe what this beer is?
So we call all of our canned sours just Weiss beers internally. We, you know, to nitpick it. Essentially, what we're doing is kind of the highest level, and we can get into it more in a second, is knocking out into a fermenter warm, having a lactobacillus-only environment for the first 12 or 24 hours, dropping the temperature, adding our brewer's yeast and our oxygen, and then fermenting out from there. So we do see some additional pH reduction, but it's much slower kind of after we drop the temperature. But we're not bringing it back into the kettle. We're not getting rid of the lactobacillus in any way throughout the process. So these are all canned. We actually have a separate canning line for our Weiss series packaging live cultures.
Awesome. Just started to write down questions. I have so many questions about this beer, and it's great, by the way. But you answered a few of them as I was writing them down. One that came up is when you guys are looking for the target acidity, or you mentioned 12 to 24 hours with the lactobacillus culture. Is that strictly a time thing, or do you guys go by like pH or titratable acidity targets to know when it's done?
Yeah, it's actually pH driven. We've just found that it almost invariably falls within that window with the lactobacillus that we're using, which we don't have a house culture for. We use commercial lactobacillus strain, but it really drops that pH to the range that we want it to be at.
What strain are you using, and then what's the temperature? You say you knock out hot, but you know, I know some strains are kind of more sensitive than others, or need a little hotter or a little cooler. What are you guys experiencing?
So we're actually using the Lallemand
sour pitch.
Yeah, sour pitch, which is actually a dry lactobacillus. Mm-hmm. It is super reliable. Pretty much it does exactly what we need it to every time we pitch it. Again, we're pitching it dry. We're not rehydrating. We're not doing anything like that. So just right into the fermenter. The temp we knock out at is around 98 to 100 degrees into the fermenter, and we just have our glycol off to make sure it doesn't accidentally drop that temperature. And it works really well. We also add CO2 through the entire knockout through our oxygen stone right after our heat exchanger on the brew house. So we try to get the fermenter to be as much of a oxygen-free environment as possible to try to create really just like the acidity that we're looking for. And back to your other point, we actually we don't measure currently titratable acid, so we're operating only off of pH right now.
Mm-hmm. Jay, does it surprise you that the yeast is consistent and reliable as described like that, when it's not rehydrated, just sort of as is?
Well, I mean, first off, not to pick nits, but bacteria technically, because we're talking about just a lactobacillus environment. And I don't know, I've not used, except to grow up a starter, I haven't used any type of like dried lactobacillus. Like you can get like the Plantarum pills, like the probiotic pills and stuff. A lot of homebrewers use that. I'm curious to see what your guys like. What is like a pitch rate when it comes to that? What's the batch size and how many of like the Lallemande? I'm sure they're in like maybe like 500 gram packs or something like that. How many of those do you need to use for something like this?
Yeah, we typically we're typically doing about 40 barrels. And actually, the Lallemandes, I think, are like 250-gram packs. So what we found is we started, just to be conservative, we wanted to kind of keep our souring to be roughly in the same time frame just for scheduling purposes. We started high. We started doing, I think, around, first one was 2 bricks. We realized, you know, it soured really quickly. And so we'll work with just one. And so we found that one, like, 250-gram pack gives us good souring, consistent flavor profiles. So that's pretty much our process. Depending, we've noticed certain things will affect the ability of the lactobacillus to sour. So occasionally we'll have to add in more. We found that salt can play a negative role in their ability to sour.
Like NaCl, not normal brewer salt.
And then we also had one time we brewed it, Berliner, right after one of our double IPAs. And we just got poor souring. So we realized, or at least our working theory now, is that there's some leftover IBUs in our HeatX that caused that lactobacillus to just not be able to sour. So, you know, in those cases, we've made process changes, but we'll add in more bricks if we don't, you know, get our souring as the way we want it.
Interesting. That seems like a really, I mean, you guys are working out all the kinks and stuff, but really easy and efficient way to get that souring, especially if you have a tank to dedicate to this process. I mean, I think a lot of people have trouble with kettle sours because, number one, it's going to tie up your kettle for a little bit, maybe even several days, and then it's not as easily purgeable as, you know, your standard fermenter would be. So I think that all sounds like you guys have really found a process that works for you, and, you know, the devil's in the details and also in the results. I think this beer is really good.
It's great.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it was about 2 years worth of trial and error, and, you know, halfway through that process, we just, you know, many times we're getting pretty frustrated and weren't sure what we were doing wrong. We were considering everything from yogurt to, you know, as you said, pills, you know, from like health food stores. And so, you know, finally we've probably gone through about 3 different suppliers of lactobacillus at this point. And we've done a lot of trial and error, and ultimately we wanted a simple process that was fairly repeatable to give us the platform with which to kind of play around with and innovate with different flavors and fruits. And
The other issue that we were trying to address with a more consistent production method was the Berliners of like 2013, early 2014 Berliners that we produced were actually all harvested from tank to tank. And we actually found a significant amount of drift in the amount of acidity. So all of a sudden we had these batches of Berliner that were just like, whoa, way too sour. And so trying to figure out a way where we could create a product, you know, like we talked about before, that was a mixed culture, but was very controlled and repeatable so that the customer knows what they're buying every time. That was kind of the background driver behind why we changed our process.
Scott, that kind of gets back to your first question, where it was like, are you surprised at the repeatability? Well, the process they just described, you think would be show greater repeatable results, but bacteria is just so unlike, it's so much less like reproducible results compared to yeast, mm-hmm. that I think it makes sense that like the process is almost like not ideal in a way that inhibits the bacteria from going too far and overproducing acid. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Totally. As you describe it, it kind of sounds like from one batch to the next, it was just like, oh my God, it was suddenly ripping sour. I mean, how gradual was that drift?
We probably seriously started to notice it, maybe totally anecdotally, but we maybe noticed it 2 batches after it had started to seriously become sour, right? So we didn't catch it right away. A lot of the Berliner, all of the Berliners we make, actually except for Golden Weiss, have a lot of fruit in them, which kind of helps to, for better or for worse, like mask that drift, because you all of a sudden you've got this jam character, you've got the peach character, right, whatever it is. So all of a sudden we were drinking one out of a sample pour and we were like, wow, this is way too aggressive for what we wanted it to be. And then we really had trouble kind of restarting that program. We had this culture we really liked. It drifted on us. We said, oh, we'll do the same thing we did last time, and it did not work out. So that's where this process came from.
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges with this was scaling it. So when we were, you know, when I first started, we were operating off of, you know, our largest fermenters were 7 barrels, and then we started getting 20s and 40s and 60s. And the main challenge with these Berliners was, you know, doing it consistently on a larger volume, so 20 barrels and above. And so that was where a lot of the pullback came from for that 1 year where we were doing a lot of internal R&D and then trying to find, again, you know, a process that was repeatable and that we could count on so that, you know, we weren't, you know, wasting product or time just waiting for these things to sour, because sometimes they just wouldn't go. And, you know, we had to do a lot of back to basics to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, well, you guys definitely figured this out. This is a great beer. I want to get us to a break so we can open some more great beer. But before we do, can I ask a question of all of us? This question and all questions are brought to you and us by Dr. Lambic and his team at sourbeerblog.com. Check out the articles on Sour Beer Blog for a great written resource devoted to teaching you how to brew and blend sour beer at home, which includes kind of his own version of this knockout hot to a fermenter with lactobacillus kind of process. And now the Sour Beer Blog crew is opening up a new brewery. In fact, it's open in Tap Room in Central Pennsylvania. Check them out at Mellow Mink Brewing, mellowmink.com.
This is Nick from Durham, North Carolina. He had written in with a mixed culture drift question, so let's address it. He said, I have a mixed culture that has drifted more and more towards a higher level of acidity than I would prefer, like we've been discussing. The flavors of the culture that I love are still there, but extended bulk aging, like anything more than 6 months, is making some beers with a pretty low pH. I'm torn because, you know, a little longer aging has produced some depth that I've preferred previously with this culture, but the pH is becoming a problem. Is there a way to prevent the acid-producing bacteria from being so dominant by controlling the fermentation temperature, like cooler? Or is this where blending should be playing a role? Thank you for any insights.
What do you guys think?
I mean, it's definitely hard to bring a culture back from where it's going, right? The initial thought that always pops into my head is like, oh, well, what if we added a few IBUs into this kettle and try to at least make the lactobacillus less potent. Obviously, that comes with the risk of destroying the lactobacillus and not destroying, but preventing any acidification. So I would be nervous there. I think blending sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, playing around with temperatures could be an interesting handle on it too. But if you're starting to get see souring potentially even post package, you know, it may be a case where temperature on the hot side or even during the fermentation, it may not be enough to mitigate it. I would go with Joey and you can play around with the IBUs. You're risking making the super, super lacto that's resistant to hops, so just be careful there. But other than that,
wet blanket strikes again.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, you know, there are just so many little variables that can be tweaked. It's hard to say, you know, which one's the magic bullet.
Yeah, good options there. I'd maybe just throw another couple of recommendations on top of those. One would be think about your primary fermentation strain. If you dry out your initial beer a little bit more, then there can be less available sugars for your mixed culture to turn into acid over time. I like the temperature idea. I'm imagining, maybe I just assumed this, but I thought this was maybe a home brewer.
Yeah, I think he's a home brewer. Yep.
So, I mean, when it comes to aging a sour beer at a cool temperature for an extended period of time or adding, you know, more blending components to your program, that's usually not an option for most home brewers. So they try and really just nail balance from the start on their sour beers. If you have those capabilities, and I assume maybe you do because those were your suggestions, then great. Yeah, go for that. I like the IBU idea. If we were talking about oak barrels, I'd be definitely talking about, you know, cleaning those out really well from batch to batch to inhibit the culture. And essentially just try and really dry it out, increase IBUs, keep acid away from the beer as long as you can. I mean, you can even just start putting Brett beers into your cellar and then adding a little bit of acid at the end to kind of blend to taste. And that's a lot of what we do at the Rare Barrel. So those would be my suggestions. And hopefully somewhere in there there's something that'll work out for you. But that drift is very common across brewers who have gotten to their fifth or so attempt at making sour beer.
For sure.
So you're not alone.
Thanks for the question, Nick. We appreciate it a lot.
All right. Should we get to a quick break?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll be right back on the Sour Hour.
Hey, everybody. It's Moscow here. Wanted to let you guys know that longtime BN homie Michael Fairbrother at Moonlight Meadery is having a special sale just for you guys in the BN Army. Right now, you can save 10% on two or more bottles by using code BNARMY over at moonlightmeadery.com/shop. If you guys don't know Moonlight Meadery, they make meads for any occasion, and they are the reference standards for mead categories in the BJCP style guidelines. That's right. These guys define the categories pretty much across the boards for meads. They are the best meads on the planet, Moonlight Meadery. So again, you can save 10% on two or more bottles of delicious, terrific, wonderful Moonlight Mead at moonlightmeadery.com/shop. Please use code BNARMY. Let them know we sent you. Show Michael you appreciate him and get some awesome mead to boot. Moonlightmeadery.com/shop. Use code BNARMY.
We're the freaks of the industry. My man Money B. The freaks of the industry.
You guys all kind of seem freaky, so I'm playing it.
No comment. Very distracting. Oregon Fruit Products.
Yeah, we're going lick for lick. How perfect is that? We've got how many sips?
There we go. Get to that in a second because I got to talk about these aseptic purees that are easy to use and convenient to store. I like this part. I nibble around your ear before I suck upon your neck. Oh, money, yeah, that's what you'll be screaming. With no additives or artificial flavor, it's simply great expression of the raw fruit. They love working with brewers to help us innovate. Check them out. Fruit for Brewing, Oregon Fruit. They bring fruit to life.
Yes, they do.
I also want to talk about one of our old favorites, Brew Guru.
Oh, the Guru.
What can it do for you? It's a great app. Like an effortless effort. Why, Scott?
It's been so long.
Effortlessly find deals. I forgot I'm bad at that word. And save money on beer, food, and brewing supplies. Level up your brew IQ with hand-picked articles, proven recipes, and trusted resources from the American Homebrewers Association and Zymergy Magazine. And use the powerful brewery locator to find nearby breweries, tap rooms, beer bars, homebrew supply shops, and brew pubs wherever you are. Brew Guru will lead you to good beer. Get the app today. Follow the path to beer enlightenment. It's free for iPhone, iPad, Android devices. Learn more at homebrewersassociation.org. I'm out of breath now. Luckily, there's a new beer open over here.
Yeah, and in honor of it, I feel like we should...
Let's bring the guys in with this.
How many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
How many sips?
I don't know. I always end up biting. Ask Mr. Fox, for he's much cleverer than I.
Mr. Fox, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
How many sips? This is so old school.
Mr. Turtle, for he's been around a lot longer than I. Me? I bite.
Mr. Turtle,
Fox is
how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
I never made it without biting. Ask Mr. Owl, for he is the wisest of us all.
Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
A good question. Let's find out. One, two, three... Three.
If
there's anything I can't stand, it's a smart owl.
There you go.
Classic.
Does it take three sips to finish this beer? I've done one so far, and it's like a third gone, so it stands to reason.
That was a good lead in there.
Thank you. So tell us about this beer, fellas. It's amazing, and I have a specific reason why I think this beer is really a standout.
This beer was a collaboration with Hop Culture Magazine. We kind of got to know them through various fests that they've invited us to, and we were just hanging out with them, and then they hosted one in Boston and were curious if we wanted to brew with them, and we jumped at the chance. This was kind of the first iteration of a sour IPA that we tried to do. So I'll tell you about a second beer after this, which was kind of a counterpoint to this beer, but essentially this was a 40 barrel batch. And to begin with, we brewed 20 barrels using our Berliner process and kind of let that sour. And then the following day, we came in and we brewed 20 barrels of our standard kind of IPA recipe and, you know, all the same timings and everything. And then We moved the Berliner base into a 40-barrel tank. We knocked out this IPA into that same 40-barrel tank, fermented that whole thing with brewer's yeast, and then we dry hopped as if it was 40 barrels of IPA, and then packaged. So it was kind of a combination of the two primary worlds in our brewery colliding.
It's funny, that's kind of what I was getting at, which is it's the acidic part of it is really seamlessly integrated with the IPA and hoppy part of it. And it's, I don't know, I guess it must be hard to do because I don't have it often. You know, whenever I have sour IPAs, generally speaking, it seems like, you know, I don't know, an IPA that had some acidity shoehorned in there. This is so seamless. It's, I don't even know the word for it really, but it's just, it's perfect. It's like it's supposed to be this.
Yeah, it's the epitome. Epitome, if you will.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is great. And how many times have you done this process before this beer? Like the 20 barrels and then the other 20 barrels and then kind of blending them in the dry hop.
Yeah. So this is actually our first go at it.
Now that's a goddamn lie.
You liar.
I mean, all right, we make a lot of IPA and we also make a lot of Berliner base. So we kind of just... They were like totally separate ideas in our head, right? And then we blended them.
I mean, I believe you, but
I'm still
going to say it's unbelievable because I think Scott's right on where it's just so well integrated, and the fact that it just worked out that both of your processes were so locked in that it was essentially a 50-50 blend of two things that you're just already good at. And, you know, beer doesn't always work out that way, I think, and it really did here. This is great. So how do you guys approach that part of the problem? Because you did say, you know, it's, you know, maybe a standard IPA, but do you adjust on the hot side from your regular IPA knowing that you're going to go through this kind of unique process?
Yeah, being a New England-based brewery, our IPAs do not carry a lot of bitterness to begin with in general. That being said, you know, I think that gives a really good base so you don't have that clash of bitter acidity, which I agree with, can definitely counteract each other in a negative way. So you kind of just have this canvas with our IPA process that creates a very soft hop character that would mesh well with a slightly lower pH. The other interesting part about this, though, is half of this beer was 3.2 or 3.3 pH in the fermenter, and then we knocked out the other half at 5 pH from the kettle, right? So instantaneously, you're already, you know, it's not a direct average, but you're somewhere between those two extremes, and we never got down to that 3.2 range again. So I think that's probably those two factors coupled is probably where that balance came from.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's great. And, you know, we've had now, we didn't spend too much time on the hop character of the last beer, but now we've had two sour beers with hops integrated into them. First question, and then the second one is kind of a bigger version of the same question. How old is this beer we're having right now? And then how are you guys seeing hops in your mixed culture beers overall? Because some of the things I've been most interested in lately are the way that these mixed culture beers can transform hoppy beers, not always necessarily as not straightforward, but like a tart IPA, but just putting more hops, late hopping into regular, like your regular sour program. How are you guys seeing that develop? And then skipping back to my first question, this is great hosting right now. How old is this beer? This, how many sips?
3 months, actually. It actually should be on the bottom of the can.
A one?
Oh, wait, I just spilled. Oh, no, I spilled
a two,
everywhere. No,
a three. 3 months. And yeah, Jake spilled all over the board. Uh-oh. Yeah, there is a date stamp, but it's kind of blurry, and I can't really read it. Can you read that?
Let me see. Probably.
Yeah,
I'm a great
reader.
The
golden price was packaged on 10-3.
10, that's, okay, yeah. I thought it said something 10, October 3.
Yeah. And then this one was probably similar.
We had a release party for it at the end of October.
Yeah, 20-something.
Gotcha. Like. All right, so we're looking at
24th, maybe, October?
So a little less than 3 months.
Yeah.
And you asked that, Jay, because...
Well, it's because it's holding up really well.
Mm, okay.
Like, what would you have guessed, Scott, like, when this was packaged?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Pretty recently,
last week.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I just think it locks in the hops so well. Yeah. And I've heard that about Brett, but I don't know. It's just with the sour cultures, too, I think it makes a difference. But I don't know. How do you guys experience it across your different brands with hops?
To us, one of the interesting things is we've done a couple variations of Golden Weiss kind of intermittently throughout the years. When we open some of the fruited Weiss beers later, there is a distinct difference in how that pH is perceived. When we're adding hops, we kind of feel like it mellows it out a little bit more, moves away from kind of the like puckeringly tart or puckeringly sour and moves more towards the tart side. And I don't know if that's if it is like truly scientific that is happening or if it is more perception that is happening. But we definitely see some change in the perceived acidity of the beer. Yeah. And then in terms of hops and mixed culture stuff, I think that's one of the coolest areas that is still somewhat mysterious. You know, you read a lot about biotransformation stuff right now with New England IPA yeast and all that stuff. But, you know, we've made a double IPA wine barrel aged Brett double IPA in wine barrels. That was awesome. You think about Anchorage, their Bitter Monk is fantastic. I think those are really cool in terms of what Brett can do to hops, because it's sort of, for lack of a better term, brewer's yeast on steroids, and no one knows what it's going to do.
Bitter Monk was definitely my first foray into Brett and hops together, and it being really terrific.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Orval, and I don't know Bitter Monk that well, but if I was going to guess what beer it was modeled after, that wouldn't be a crazy assumption. You go and have it in Belgium, and it's a bitter Belgian pale ale. No Brett character. Mm. Like, seriously, none.
Orval is, you mean?
Yeah. And then it travels across to here.
Different beer.
And it's always older, and it's been a little bit warm. And then you have what we think of as Orval, and it's like what we consider the classic Brett beer. And, I mean, I'm kind of dumb, so I never really put two and two together, but I'm learning quickly how much an influence hops have in all of these, driving some of the classic flavors that you think of when you think of Brett or Lambic, Goose, things like that. So I'm always interested to hear different brewers' takes on how they're interpreting it in their programs. But, man, this is your first tart IPA? Just retire.
Yeah,
you know?
Go out on top.
Yeah, that was cool. And then right after that one, we actually released a tart IPA that we brewed with New Image Brewing out of Colorado, where we did our normal Berliner process and then brought it back into the kettle and boiled it again, but we hopped it like an IPA while it was in the kettle to try to, and then we had both of those beers kind of on tap simultaneously. So that was very cool to see, like, kind of the more intense acid profile of the New Image versus this kind of blended up pH of how many sips. They were cool to try side by side. We ran out of the other one, though.
And what did you guys prefer? Like, if you're, you know, thinking, this sounds like you did a couple of these collaborations, but let's say you're going to make these, you know, kind of on an ongoing basis, or people listening are thinking about both of those separate approaches, what would you kind of recommend? What did you prefer? Or maybe is it a blend of the two?
For me personally, I think that the New Image style, where it's one tank that we bring back into the foil kettle and then treat it like an IPA afterwards, could give you a more interesting base to then add Brett to, or to, you know, bottle condition with Brett and kind of give it the Orval treatment, for lack of a better word. But that being said, I think up front and fresh, I was more drawn towards how many sips. What about you, Maddie?
Yeah, I really did like the how many sips, but the New Image was also equally delicious. I think it's just exciting to be able to have, you know, multiple different processes. You know, the more variables you can play with in the cellar or on the hot side, just I think the more variety and the more almost like texture to these beers you can get. So to me, the more processes, the merrier. And I thought it was, you know, cool playing around and, you know, just getting weird with the beer, for lack of a better term, and just seeing how, you know, how different processes can impact the ultimate product.
Awesome. And maybe, you know, I've gotten too far ahead of myself and just been really excited about these beers we keep opening. Could you guys give us maybe a little bit of a virtual tour of, you know, what the sour program at Night Shift looks like. I mean, we've certainly talked a little bit about things you guys are doing on the hot side, but about like barrels and, you know, what percentage of your program is beers that you'd consider in the sour and wild category?
So in terms of oak barrels, we actually used to have a much larger program. I think, Jay, when you first came through, might have been the peak. Since then, with expansions, we've actually had to dial it back, and we're trying to take the opportunity to actually make it more accurate. So a little bit less experimental stuff and a little bit more like, oh, this is how we make like that Brett double IPA that I mentioned before, right? Just because space is quickly becoming limited, and so we need to have product in barrels that we know we love and that we want to share with the public versus experimental stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, a few years ago we had more space than we knew what to do with, so we could kind of go wild with the barrels, and just, it was almost to the point where we'd say, oh, well, we have a brew slot, let's get some oak and play around. And we didn't really necessarily have a target in mind, and now we've gone through the motions and we've learned a lot. And you know, as Joe said, our goal going forward is to try and, you know, while space is more limited with the, you know, ongoing construction and expansion, to try and dial in the barrel and sour program so that, you know, we are basically batting at a higher percentage. So we're say we do 100 barrels now, we'd like to be able to count these things, 80 of those, you know, whereas before it was like, let's see how it goes. And, you know, it's never fun to dump beer that's been sitting around for a few years. So we're just trying to learn what's the right frequency to check on these products, and, you know, what worked well last time and what didn't. And part of the challenge here is just lack of climate control too. And there's always, you know, in the summer, it's always trying to, tanks are always full, and we're trying to make as much product as possible. So it's really just challenges carving out the time to really tend to that more exciting program for many of us.
And then in terms of percentage of overall production, the Weiss series is probably going to represent between 5% and 10% of total volume. We're shooting around like 1,200 barrels is like our projection this year across four different brands. So depending on how that shakes out and what Night Shift Distributing is seeing the market need and all that sort of stuff will kind of determine that.
Gotcha. That's a pretty robust program. Should we take our show break, Scott?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Can you guys hang on for a little bit longer?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so, because we got more beers to try.
Awesome. Actually, Scott, I have one more thing to do. Thank you. Want to thank our great sponsor, Neshaminy Creek Brewing.
Yes.
Three times Philly. Sorry, with a, you know, just outside of Boston Brewer that I'm talking about Philly here, but three times Philly Beer Scene Magazine Brewer of the Year, two-time GABF Vienna Style Lager Medal winner, and two bronzes for Smoke Lager, renovated tasting rooms, a variety of beer styles from hoppy double IPAs to sessionable poundable lagers, to oak fermented saisons and sour beers. Free brewery tours on Saturdays. I'm just going to say third location opening up. Check them out.
Probably working on it. Oh, my thing's frozen.
Yeah, I'm really challenging Scott here. But thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Doing a great job. Looking forward to poker.
Yes.
Thanks to Bevo. How's the online shopping going?
She's on the phone. She's literally on her cell phone. You're good. It's all right. Don't worry.
Thanks to Joe and Matt from Night Shift. Thanks to all of our sponsors for bringing the guys back in just a little bit. Thanks to all you listeners as well. And until next time, stay sour.
One, two, three.